So I've been wondering, have any of you dealt with any uncertainty lately of any kind? I can't say that actually with a straight face. Consider the last 400 days. We have been steeped in uncertainty, right? Over a year ago now, we learned out of the blue, it seemed to most of us learning for the first time, that we were in the middle of a pandemic. And then it wasn't very long after that that we were told that we needed to stay home, that we shouldn't go out. It was bizarre and kind of otherworldly, wasn't it, that experience? It seemed so hard to believe, kind of incredulous change in our day-to-day lives. And then as traffic quieted and the mass transit stopped, we noticed the purity of nature around us. People from all over the world began to report the clear waters and the ability to see mountains and hear birds, sometimes for the first time in generations. That was a big shift, but there was more to come. The children couldn't go to school anymore, and so they had to shift to school at home on a screen. And that meant that teachers had to make big shifts and parents had to scramble. How were they going to have their kids at home at the same time that maybe they were working, either at home or outside the home, and figure all that out? And yet, somehow we did. We made it through these changes. Our social connections went from being in person to suddenly being by device. And people who lived by themselves, many of them reported greater levels, obviously, of loneliness. So it's been a lot that we've shifted through, that we've allowed ourselves to adapt, or we've adapted by, you know, by need, forced in a way, to make these changes along the way. And then just when it looked like things were starting to get better, they got worse. And just when it looked like things were going to get worse, they got better. So it's been quite a ride, and we're still on it. It's not completely done yet. But think about all that we have learned, all the spiritual lessons that have been available to us. This new series that I'm starting today is called Mastering the Art of Uncertainty. And for 4 weeks, we're going to look at how we've awakened in the past 400 days or so, and what more there is for us, so that going forward, we can really move with this idea of uncertainty. I mean, after all, it's only been 2,500 years since the Greek philosopher Heraclitus said that the only thing that is constant is change. He also said if you can't step in the same river twice, because the river's never the same, and neither is the person who steps in it. So after 2,500 years of that wisdom, and after 400 days of our direct experience, and really our whole lifetime of uncertainty, I think we're sort of getting the hang of it. We humans are very resistant to these truths. We want certainty, and it is an ever-changing world. So certainty, the certainty that we tend to cling to, it tends to be about fixation. And fixation can easily lead us to fundamentalism. Now, you might say, well, I'm not a fundamentalist. It's those people who are meeting over in that church this morning that are fundamentalists. But consider this for a minute. Do you ever grab onto a belief as a way of neatly explaining reality and then feel sort of maybe even smug in that belief that you really get this, and you repeat it, and then your friends repeat it, and it becomes a shared reality, say, in a spiritual community, and we all kind of rally around that, and it just makes us feel better. Take, for example, this time I heard Carolyn Mace say, in her very direct way, if you know Carolyn Mace and her style, she said, "What if everything doesn't happen for a reason?" Ooh, that one really made me take a moment to pause. Well, I guess that would put me squarely in uncertainty, that idea that everything maybe doesn't happen for a reason. And what happens when we're uncertain is we begin to feel a little, often a little uncomfortable, right? We feel a little vulnerable. And that's exactly where spirit wants us. So it's our egos that we work with in order to open up the way, to find our way through this. Because our egos will want to create whatever feels safe to us. And whatever feels safe to us often is what keeps us very small. And so it is in that smallness and in that safety that we create a bunch of basically smoke and mirrors. Buddhist nun Pema Chodron explains that the root of fundamentalism and tendencies is this idea of fixed identity. That we get this idea, this developed view, that we are either good or bad, worthy or unworthy, this or that. It tends to fall into these sort of binary ideas. She tells this story, that when she came as the director of Gampo Abbey, that she thought of herself as likable and flexible and, you know, open-minded, open-hearted. She was pretty clear of who she was. She had an identity, a sense of herself. She felt confident in that. But then the residents started giving her feedback, and the feedback sounded different than that, that she was disempowering them, that they just never felt buoyed up. They felt disempowered. And new residents would come and she'd get the same negative feedback, but it would never sink in because she was so sure of her identity. She said it took years, I mean, over years of this constant same feedback. Finally, it broke through miraculously. And she realized, I'm just not a very good director. So sometimes it takes us time, but this fixed binary thinking really can be quite dangerous. When you think about it, let's take the example of those of us who consider ourselves not racist and label other people racist. So when we do this sort of binary of there are people who are racist and there are people who are not racist, we totally miss the system that we live in, right? Because we're just busy defending the fact that we're not racist. Actually, Robin DiAngelos talks about this in her book, White Fragility, and she talks about how she does a lot of racial consciousness teaching. And she says that progressives are the worst to teach about race because they're so entrenched in the identity that I'm not racist. So I have nothing to learn, right? Because I'm not racist. And yet, of course, we're kept in the dark in our own ignorance when we live in that kind of fixed identity. We don't see what's really going on in the world. We don't hear what people of color are telling us. And we don't see the systemic nature of it. So most of us have this sort of entrenched egoic habit. It's just sort of how we think we're staying safe. And the habit then creates these sort of bubbles of reality. And then the bubbles of reality become, we do this whole dance really to line up life within our paradigm that fits our bubble of reality. And we're so focused on preserving that made-up reality that we actually miss the real reality that is going on sometimes. This fundamentalism of certainty, we start living in a more authentic divine flow when we give it up, when we let go of some of our grip. And we could even save lives, including our own. So how we learn is by opening our minds, and some of the habits that we can take on are phrases, actually, that we can say to ourselves and say to others that become then a new habit. Things like, oh, I'm curious about that. Tell me more. Well, that's curious. Let me look at that from a different angle. Or simply, I don't know. All of these things are habits that begin to open the mind and open the heart. So when we take, say, certainty that is sort of like this, right? I know, I've got it, I've got my grip on certainty, and we do have to kind of pry open, really. It's not just as simple as opening, but usually kind of pry open those places of certainty. But once we do, we realize, wow, actually nothing is there because it's a bunch of made-up stuff. But if instead we keep our hand open, it's the open hand of faith that shows us the way. In the open hand of faith, we find peace. We find our ability to be adaptable. We find a sense, an underlying sense of well-being, a feeling that we can access. Pema sums it up with this very simple, pithy, and I think profound statement. She says, resistance to change is suffering. Relaxing into the groundlessness, the dynamic of life, is enlightenment. So still, our bubbles burst sometimes, don't they? Things, life changes on a dime, and suddenly everything is different. And it's hard for us to adjust really quickly when bubbles burst. For example, I'm thinking about my friend who at age of 58 found out that her biological father, the man who raised her, the man who she adored, actually wasn't her biological father. And it just rocked her world, her sense of family, her sense of identity, her sense of closeness with her father. All these things were up for grabs. She had insomnia. She had disturbing dreams. It was really hard for her to work through it. And it took time to come to a level of acceptance and even forgiveness for those who had not told her the truth. But she made it. So what happens when bubbles burst is the imputed meanings, the meanings that we have overlaid on life and circumstances and ourselves and each other, they just dry up. It's like opening the hand of certainty, and it's like, oh, what? Nothing is there. Suddenly those meanings that we've created are not there anymore for us. So we often feel a bit unmoored. We feel lost when that happens. Can anybody relate to that in the last many months? That there have been times of feeling lost in all the change that has been up in the world. It's all been framed in the time frame of the pandemic, but some of those changes have not been necessarily exactly about the pandemic. And of course, personal changes in our lives are always something that we're dancing with. So what allows us to move through these changes, and even the shocking ones, is this ability to sort of open up a little bit and then begin to access that feeling underneath it all, that feeling of faith that is that feeling of all is well. It's a sense that all is well despite what's going on in the world or in our lives. And like my friend, we can't always go there immediately, but we can allow ourselves some space, and faith is there for us. It waits for us. And then it helps carry us through. So that mooring we find in the sea changes of life is something not so much to grab onto and not to look for so much outside of ourselves, but to find it inside of ourselves. We can think of it this way. Don't so much think of faith as an anchor, but think of it instead as a flotation device. So if we float on the sea change of life, we've got sort of a touchstone there. That's faith. But it's not like something that's going to sink us. That's certainty. It's under the weight of certainty that we anchor ourselves to these false ideas, and we can't breathe there. When George Floyd said he can't breathe, he was waking us up. He gave his life so we could wake up to these ideas that we live in a non-racist society, to be so certain that we're not racist, and to have it all blow up in our faces and go, whoa, actually, there's nothing there in that certainty. It's not true. And so now what? How do we dance now? How do we move to that feeling of knowing we can come to an all is well for everyone? So bubbles burst, and sometimes we feel lost for a while, but these are just growing pains, spiritual growing pains that we feel along the way. The dancer Agnes DeMille said this. She said, living is a form of not being sure, not knowing what next or how. The moment you know how, you begin to die a little. The artist never entirely knows. We guess. We may be wrong, she said, but we take leap after leap in the dark. And so we can become like the spiritual artist who takes leap after leap in the dark, or actually more commonly, step after step after step. And each of those steps can offer us a little less drama. if we allow it to be so. We lessen our drama and we increase our joy by weakening these patterns of fixed ideas and widening our perspectives, by living in the I don't know, living in the question, living in the curiosity. And when we do that, we get a bigger dance floor for our lives. This is how we master the art of uncertainty. We allow life to be just as it is, and we dance with it. So how specifically do we do that? Well, here's one way. Instead of getting caught up in the drama, if we just breathe and go within. So you know how the drama happens, right? We begin to, in our own minds, create and story on top of story, and what if on top of what if becomes part of it. Our emotions get engaged and we sort of spiral upward. Then we get together with other people that think the same way or feel the same way, and we start feeding off of each other, and it becomes this frenzy of drama. But if instead we go inside and just breathe and go within, we find a little bit more calm there. And we can find our way. But even better than paying attention to the actual thoughts and feelings is just to feel the dynamic energy that is there, the dynamic energy of thought and emotion. Because that energy connects us with spirit. The energy is spirit. And in that dynamic energy of that makes thought and emotion, we have the possibility to recreate right there. To allow that energy to move through us and to recognize the passion we feel, the emotion we feel, the ideas that we have. If we just get into the energetic part of it for now, it can serve us so much better. Instead of paying attention to the content or even the context of the thoughts, we widen it and pay attention to the space between the thoughts. This is what meditators learn to do, essentially. And when you meditate and you meditate on the spaciousness, you become the spaciousness of spirit. You move through life in that kind of spaciousness. You are able to take step after step or leap after leap into unknown possibility because you have had the experience of knowing the joy, the aliveness, and the sense of true security that comes from spirit. So it may seem like there's nothing in that space between to the outside eye, but actually everything is there. The divine presence is there in that movement between subject, in that space between movement. And so it's there that we enter and there that we access and experience that underlying feeling of all is well, no matter what. Faith. Faith is our trusted partner in this dance of life. And it carries us in grace to move through life and to live life in a more fun way, in a more full way. By focusing on the spaciousness in our minds and our hearts, where our faith is found, we stop being tattered about by the winds of life. And instead, we see our shattered certainties when our bubbles burst, and we see instead opportunities to grow from there. We also can become more skilled at the art of uncertainty when we have these kinds of experiences in life. It's not that we want to welcome the bursting of our bubbles all the time, because those can be difficult times in our lives, but we get more skillful, and so we can see the good in that as we experience them. So it helps to remember to be maybe a little bit more like the trees. I often think about our beautiful cypress trees where we just had a service outdoors and the wind came up and we got to see those trees dancing and swaying in the wind. And it's living a little bit more like that, being able to, there's a sense of rootedness and groundedness, but there's also an ability to be with the groundlessness, to be with the winds of life. Dedri Francois reminds us of this truth, that through it all, no matter what we're going through it all is God. Let's take a break for a moment and listen and watch Dedri sing this original song.
I wrote this song as a reminder that no matter what it is that we may be going through, whatever challenges may come in our lives, underpinning everything is God. In and through all of it is God. It's God. I can shout out in anger or think before I speak. I can choose to be strong or surrender to your feet. I can rage like a fire or soothe like the breeze. All of this is all of you and me. In and through it all it is God. In and through it all is love. I am here to be a mirror, to reflect the divine in you. In and through it all is God. Yes. Life can play a soft, sweet melody or screech in tragedy. It can wrap you in its arms or bring you humbly to your feet. It can bring so much suffering or joy and harmony. All of this is all of you.
Wow, we were just appreciating Dedri Francois, and I bet you were too, her passion and her soulfulness in what she brings to us. So let's all affirm together that we get to bring Dedri Francois sometime from Canada to be with us in person for a service or a concert or both. Hopefully Lisa and Tyler are hearing me say this. So far, as we've been talking about this idea of uncertainty and been defining faith as this key part of mastering the art, and I've been defining it as this underlying feeling that all is well. Faith, of course, is more than that, though. Faith is also a sense of power. It's a sense of knowing and an awareness and a reliance upon this powerful force of goodness in the universe, in our lives. And so Jesus challenges us to look beyond our perspectives, our small and limited perspectives, to the vastness, the possibilities that are there for us. Over and over again, he stretches the possibilities. And he says that we can even move fixed things with our faith. Truly, I tell you, he says, if you have faith like the grain of a mustard seed, you can look at this mountain and have this mountain say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it will move, and nothing shall be impossible to you. The difference between Jesus and us is that he never forgot who he was. And so he was able to perform these kinds of miracles of raising the dead and moving mountains and walking on water. And it may seem ludicrous to us. But actually, if we remember the truth of who we are, these things can indeed be true. But the clarity is that the mountains that we are moving are not so much worrying about the mountain outside of us, but the mountains inside of us. It's the inner glacier that we're moving. It's those inner glaciers of fixed ideas of our own identity, of who I am and who you are and how you perceive me and how the world should be. It's a lot of how things should be that we create these sort of, you know, false ideas and cling to them. And so moving and shifting consciousness is always key, right? Shifting that glacier of consciousness, then we can say this mountain will move from here to there, and indeed it will, and nothing shall be impossible to us because the boulder is out of our way. That's the work that is done, really, is on the inner mountains shifting. So one way we can do this is by inquiring within. It's that classic mystical question of self-inquiry. Who am I? You could actually do this in partners, too. I really enjoy insight dialogue as a form of insight meditation where in partnership, you ask questions of the other person while you hold space for them. And then they go within, and because you're in a meditative space together, that person can go deeper and deeper in the responses to who am I. And you can actually behold how the layers peel away, the roles peel away, and the person comes to that divine essence, right, that permeates the universe typically. And then you can have that experience as well. You can certainly do it on your own. You can do it through journaling. You can do it through meditation. But that same process of peeling away the onion, essentially, to that very essence of who we are, that's what frees us and allows us to reconnect with a faith that knows of this powerful force in the universe, this self-magnificence that is a part of our divinity, and that underlying feeling that all is well. So there's an old Tibetan traditional story called The Frog in the Well. And it's about this frog that lives in a well. Imagine that. And that frog has a visitor one day. You know, the frog is going about its usual well-like business, whatever that is, croaking and swimming, perhaps, and looking for flies. And along comes this other frog. It's a frog from the ocean. So they begin a little dialogue, and the well frog says, well, how big is the ocean, actually? And the ocean frog says, oh, gets up on his little hind legs and puts out his forelegs and says, it's gigantic. And the well frog says, what do you mean? Like about as big as a quarter, like a quarter size of my well? The ocean frog says, no, much bigger. Well, the little well frog gets incredulous and says, what? Do you mean as big as my well? But the ocean frog says, way bigger. Well, the well frog does not believe. And so they decide that they will hop together to the ocean to take a look. When they get to the ocean frog, of course, opens up his arms with joy for his new friend, the well frog, to see the magnificence, the vastness, the possibilities, the beauty. And the little well frog is so overwhelmed, his mind cannot take it. It's literally blown, and he dies on the spot. Now, I know that's a sad ending, but it is a traditional story that often have those kinds of endings. But of course, the point is the confines in which the well frog lives, the smallness of his life, keeps him from the possibilities, the beauty, the vastness of the of what he's missing. And that is, of course, the same thing for all of us. We keep grasping at that uncertainty, clinging to uncertainty, creating these false paradigms like little wells in which we live. And all the while, we are completely missing the possibilities that await us. If instead we can be like ocean frog and, you know, leap into the mystery, jump in, have the courage to ride the waves with joy and to fully live life. That's really what the invitation is. When we let go of our grip on certainty, we begin to move with faith, to dance in this life in a whole different way. So, as we allow ourselves to live like ocean frog, let's begin to recognize these truths, that with our faith, we can live more freely and more joyfully. And still, life will keep on changing, but we'll be all right with it. We'll just be like on our flotation device of faith, just moving in the sea changes of life. So I invite you to close out with me with this affirmation and to use this affirmation throughout the week. Together, with faith, I live freely and joyfully in the ever-changing sea of life. And so it is.